Star, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we continue our series on Project 2025 by discussing what it would mean for the economy and this country's growing wealth inequality. Project 2025 would raise taxes on the middle class and cut taxes for the wealthy and corporations. A family of four making $110,000 a year would see a $3,000 tax increase, while households making more than $10 million would receive between $1.5 and $2.4 million in tax cuts, according to the Center for American Progress. And then there's the corporate tax rate. In 2017, Donald Trump and congressional Republicans cut the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21%. In 2018, the Congressional Budget Office said bringing that corporate tax rate down cost almost $2 trillion over 10 years, eroding the country's revenue base. Well, Project 2025 calls for bringing down that rate even further to 18%. That would be a $24 billion tax cut for Fortune 100 companies, $1.3 billion in tax cuts for the country's five largest oil companies, $1.6 billion in tax cuts for the five largest drug makers, and $2.1 billion tax cuts for the five largest Wall Street banks. Joining us to talk about what this means and what it would mean for wealth inequality are two guests. Brendan Duke is Senior Director for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress, an independent, nonpartisan policy institute dedicated to improving the lives of everyone through bold progressive ideas. In a report about what Project 2025 means for tax policy, he writes, the end result is a staggering redistribution of taxes from the wealthy and corporations to low and middle income households. Hi, Brendan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
We're also joined by Monique Morrissey, Senior Economist for the Economic Policy Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank that centers low and middle income working families and economic policy discussions as they fight for, quote, a world where every worker has access to a good job with fair pay, affordable health care, retirement security, and a union. Monique Morrissey recently wrote a piece for EPI Action called A Republican Takeover Would Benefit Billionaires, Not You. It looks at the budget plan released by the Republican Study Committee in March, which Monique says is just as radical as Project 2025. She's got a new piece called A Republican Takeover Would Endanger Retirement and Healthcare Programs. Hi, Monique. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have both of you. I want to start off by asking you a basic question about the economy. Over the last couple of months, we have heard from radio hosts and TV hosts who say that Republicans say if Donald Trump would just stick to talking about the economy, he would have a much better chance of winning because so many people care about the economy right now for a variety of reasons, but they never go further than that. They don't talk about the actual economic plan. So, Brendan, I just wonder, a general question, what are your thoughts about the conversation we're hearing about the economy in major media outlets?
I actually think you framed it exactly right. So I think Donald Trump's plan, you know, or what the, you know, pundits telling him to talk about the economy want is to just kind of complain about inflation, which obviously makes sense because, you know, American families are so upset about the inflation they've experienced over the last few years. But we do know that inflation happened across the world. It happened in Canada. It happened in Europe. It happened in Japan, which is a country that didn't see inflation for two decades, right? And, you know, I think they want to stick to that, and they don't want to stick to what is proposed, which I think the key thing is there's really two parts of what he's proposed, especially on taxes, which is on the one hand, he wants to give giant tax cuts for wealthy people and corporations, as you laid out, you know, tax cuts for the Fortune 100, big oil, big pharma, et cetera. And on the other hand, he wants to pay for it by raising taxes on everyday Americans with these giant taxes on imported goods, which I have calculated would cost a typical family $3,900, almost $4,000 a year, as they buy clothes, as they buy food, as they buy medicine, as they buy gas. And so really, it's the most regressive tax plan I could possibly imagine that truly, you know, shifts income from low and middle income working families to the wealthy. And I think that would not be a very beneficial conversation for them.
Monique, what would you add?
I completely agree with Brendan. I mean, I would just add that in addition to raising taxes and tariffs on ordinary Americans, it would absolutely gut the programs that ordinary Americans, working Americans count on. So it, you know, it depends on, now Trump is very careful to not advertise that he wants to cut Social Security and Medicare, but other Republicans are not so shy. In fact, the House Republicans that I've studied, 80% of them have signed on to a document that would cut $1.5 trillion from Social Security, $4.5 trillion from Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance Program, and Obamacare or ACA, Affordable Care Act, and $1.2 trillion from Medicare over a decade. So we're talking about 20% cuts in sort of social insurance programs or mandatory programs that people rely on, like Social Security and Medicare, and 40% cuts in budget discretionary budget programs, the non-defense discretionary. I mean, I don't think that they could actually do that, but you're talking about just slashing government, and these are programs that benefit working Americans, but billionaires don't care about.
Well, this is incredible. 80% of House Republicans have signed on to this plan, which would cut $1.5 trillion from Social Security retirement. According to the Social Security Administration, half the population age 65 or older live in households that receive at least 50% of their family income from Social Security benefits. So I just have to ask you again, Monique, because we have spent months hearing from the pundits that Donald Trump is winning on the economy. How do you explain this? Why aren't they drilling down and talking about these issues rather than just this surface poll? I mean, we understand people are really angry about what's going on with the economy. People are struggling right now. But why aren't the media doing a better job of really drilling down?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues is that there has been a lot of focus on Project 2025, and Trump himself is a canny campaigner. He just wants to win. And so he does not, you know, as Brendan mentioned, he doesn't really talk about his policies aside from deporting immigrants or blaming everything on immigrants and tax cuts, you know, those and trade. Those are the issues that he does talk about. He doesn't talk about this stuff. You wonder, well, then people have a tendency to think, well, it's never going to happen, you know, although the Republicans did come within one vote of getting rid of Obamacare. So I don't think that it's, you know, I think that these things are contingent. It's not really true that we can count on somebody pushing back and that they're not passing. But I think that the issue is a lot of people don't really believe that the Republicans are serious about the plans that they put out. But the flip side of that is, then why are they putting out these unpopular plans? And the reason is that they're unpopular with the average voter. And they're wonky, and they expect the average voter isn't going to read them. But they are very popular with the billionaire donors of the Republican Party. And Trump has been quite blunt about, you know, catering to these people. I mean, he just recently had a meeting with billionaires that included his former education secretary, Betsy DeVos. And meanwhile, you know, the Project 2025 is talking about eliminating the department she used to head, the Department of Education. And yet she quit after October 7th. That was, after the, the October 6th insurrection, you know, there weren't many days left in her, in the administration anyhow, but, you know, she was perturbed by that at least. And why is she back giving him money? And the reason is that I think the Republicans really are serious about the trillions in tax cuts that benefit the wealthy. And they are also very serious about some of these cuts, and they think they can get away with it if they do enough fear mongering about the fact, you know, the way the Republicans frame their own cuts to Social Security and Medicare is claiming that they're going to happen anyhow, and then also telling seniors that the seniors are not going to be directly affected. It's just future generations, and this is a playbook the Republicans have been doing for a long time, for decades actually. You know, sort of separating out current beneficiaries, saying you won't be affected, but we're going to take these trillions out, and sort of counting on people not paying attention, but they are deadly serious. There's no, you know, if there's no reason if that they're floating these things if they weren't serious about them, because it's unpopular. It's not like they're doing it, you know, to win popularity contests.
Well, and again, just to repeat this, because I have never heard of this House Republican Study Committee, and you found that it represents 80% of House Republicans. So this information just needs to get shared, especially because millions of people rely on these programs. So it would cut $1.5 trillion from Social Security retirement and disability benefits, $4.5 trillion from Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, and the ACA over a decade, $1.2 trillion from Medicare. And like you said, people say this could never happen, but people said the same thing about Roe v. Wade. So thank you for shining a light on that because it's so important. I want to also ask you both a general question about taxes because, again, taxes just doesn't get the attention that it deserves. So we live in a country, I'm looking at the latest numbers of the population of the country. We live in a country of almost 336 million people. This is a massive country. I was just talking to a friend yesterday about how California is the size of three countries in Europe. So there's just a lot of, there's so many needs in this country. And people always say roads, firefighting, schools, that kind of thing. Taxes pay for that. And of course, we could have a whole hour discussion on how we would all like our tax dollars to go to different places. So I just want to acknowledge that. But can you talk about how you both think about taxes in this country? Because a lot of politicians, especially on the right, have done a very good job of making people hate taxes. A lot of people don't even know how the tax system works, and the Democrats hardly talk about it. So, Brendan, how do you think about taxes?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they're necessary to fund the government that we pay for. And when you look at what the federal government does, you know, I mean, in some sense, you know, I think the simplest description is it's a health insurance company, that's Medicare and Medicaid. It's an annuity company, it's Social Security, and it has an army. It's got military. Those are kind of three of the most basic things, right? And that's what most of our tax dollars go to fund. And when Republicans talk about, you know, cutting, you know, various programs, they just haven't been able to do it. I think, you know, one example of this is, you know, the House. You know, House Republicans, they tried to, you know, massively, you know, cut, you know, the rest of the government in, you know, the discretionary spending process last year. And they couldn't pass those bills out of a Republican House because House Republicans thought the cuts were too large. They just can't find, you know, the money to cut that stuff, right? So I think that, you know, when you look at what we spend money on, I mean, certainly, again, as you said, we can, like, debate some of the priorities. But I think, you know, most of it is broadly popular programs that Americans rely on. Like, for example, you know, Social Security is the country's number one anti-poverty program. Seniors, so many seniors would be in poverty if we didn't have it. It's important to fund it. And, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, all that same stuff. And certainly, you know, there's a lot of ways that we can raise taxes to fund that government. I think the easiest stuff to look at is one, just kind of reverse the cut in the corporate tax rate that Donald Trump did, that they did a giant, you know, cut to corporate taxes, put it on the credit card, and all of a sudden they say we can't afford anything and now we need to cut a bunch of programs. It makes no sense. Mm. And then looking at other stuff, which is that, you know, I think our tax code is relatively progressive, but there's special tax rates for certain types of income that wealthy people earn. So, for example, you know, the top tax rate is about 40% if you earn wages, but if your income comes from investments, it's about half of that, which it just, that just doesn't make any sense. The simplest thing is to just tax them at the same rate, that we should be treating people equally, right? So I think there's a lot of ways that, you know, we can raise the money to pay for these programs that are so critical. And then when you look at what Donald Trump is proposing, he's talking about essentially trying to replace income taxes, which are relatively progressive, with taxes on imported goods, which low and middle income families pay. I think there's a role for tariffs, you know, in trade policy, but he wants to just tax everything, including things like coffee and bananas, things like the United States doesn't make at all, right? And so families are just going to pay for that. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can pay for a government that, you know, does a lot that, you know, actually reduces poverty a lot and makes people better off by, you know, taxing the wealthy, as opposed to, you know, the approach he's kind of laying out, which is just requiring low and middle income families to shoulder more of the burden of funding a government that, you know, takes care of us all.
Monique, how do you think and talk about taxes?
I agree with everything that Brendan said. I would just as sort of a nifty coincidence or bad coincidence. One of the things that the Republicans in the House, and again, we're talking about the Republican Study Committee, and 80% of House Republicans, including the entire leadership, have signed on to this. So this is not something they can dodge or walk away from, like Project 2025, even though I do believe Project 2025 is the Republican agenda, but people can have some deniability there. There's no deniability here about House Republicans. Anyhow, this document, they want to extend the Trump tax cuts that cost $4.6 billion over a decade. $4.6 trillion over a decade. And then in this, almost all of it went to billionaires. And there were also a lot of tax cuts, as Brennan laid out, for corporations. And that's almost exactly the amount that they want to cut from healthcare programs aside from Medicare. So they want to cut $4.5 trillion for Medicaid, CHIP, and Obamacare. And they want to cut taxes, most of which go to billionaires, by $4.6 trillion. So that's the trade-off right there. I think that illustrates what we're talking about. And the Republican Study Committee also goes on, you know, like if you look at the number of pages devoted to cuts and programs that are tiny, they do it. There's a lot of sort of they'll target the Kennedy Center or a, program, tiny little programs for social, you know, because they offend their sensibilities. Like, so there's some program that's targeted on making sure that LGBTQ people are treated fairly or something like that. So they'll, but these are minuscule programs. The bulk of the economy, exactly, or the government, is exactly as Brennan said, is those three things, is healthcare and the defense and Social Security. At the local, state and local level, it's predominantly education, also to a lesser extent, things like security service, you know, like police and fire. But that's the bulk of who the government is. And those are very popular. So Americans think they don't like government. They think they don't like taxes, but they actually do like all of the above and are willing to pay for them. And in fact, that's the crux of why there have been these, you know, weirdly unpopular proposals to cut Social Security, is that Social Security, there is sort of an action forcing event, which is that in less than a decade, the trust fund is going to be drawn down because the baby boomers retired and there was trillions of dollars that were saved in the trust fund in order to pay for the boomer retirement. And after that, the amount of money that's coming in will be less than what needs to be paid out. Social Security is not going to go bankrupt. Money's still going to go out because it's mostly paid for by current workers, but there's going to have to be a cut. And since that would be hugely unpopular, not to mention catastrophic for many seniors, it's not going to happen. And so what the Republicans want to do is make sure that they cut the benefits rather than raise revenues. And the reason they're so eager, even though it's very unpopular, to talk about cutting benefits, is that the most popular way to raise revenues for Social Security is to ensure that high-income people are paying the same share of their earnings on Social Security contributions as the rest of us. So right now, any earnings that you have above $168,000, are not taxed, and that seems to people unfair. And it's hugely popular to tax that. And billionaires keep saying, "Well, I don't really need Social Security, so go ahead and cut my benefits." But what they really don't want to do is to be taxed on their earnings. So they are kind of, a lot of these plans will pretend that they're cutting benefits, or will say that they're cutting benefits for high earners. But what they really want to do is prevent any increase in taxes among high earners. And also, not all of the benefit cuts, the tax cuts are actually harmful to high earners, because one of the things that Trump has thrown out is eliminating taxes on Social Security benefits, which only higher income seniors are paying. So, and that would be very, very bad for Social Security's finances. So it's not entirely coherent policy, but generally speaking, they want to protect billionaires from tax increases, and they're willing to propose very unpopular benefit cuts because they're more concerned about the billionaires than they are about even upper middle class or working class Americans.
And Brendan, I found an article at Common Dreams recently that says $10 trillion in added debt since 2001 shows the Bush and Trump tax cuts broke our modern tax structure. And these numbers come from the U.S. Treasury Department. So how should we think about tax cuts going back to the George W. Bush days and then what we saw under Trump and then what they're promising to do if he wins again?
So if you've got a lot of time and not much to do, which is probably not most of your listeners, but if, you know, just for historical, you know, trivia, you can look up Congressional Budget Office reports, you know, dating way back when. They obviously photocopied on the internet. And if you look at the ones from the late 1990s, and I think the last one in the year 2000, they show the trajectory of, you know, our federal debt as a share of our economy. And it goes to zero and almost negative, and turns negative, right? Because our tax system was collecting more money than was needed to pay, you know, for government. And in fact, you know, everybody knew that Social Security and Medicare, those costs would go up because of the baby boomers. We knew that there were baby boomers in the late 1990s. And, but it was enough to cover it all. And actually, you know, you look in through the reports and they talk about what the federal government would do with the surplus and how to do it and, you know, all these complicated issues that happens when the federal government is having negative debt. And what happened then is George W. Bush cut taxes a lot. And when those were made permanent in a bipartisan deal that Barack Obama signed, and that locked in a fiscal trajectory where, you know, our debt-to-GDP ratio just kind of grows toward infinity. And again, everybody knew that there were baby boomers, but we nevertheless locked in these tax cuts. And so that difference between having the Bush tax cuts and not having the Bush tax cuts is the difference between, is the difference between a fiscal picture that is sustainable and one that is not. And then in 2017, Donald Trump became president, and he enacted another round of tax cuts, even though we knew that the fiscal trajectory was, you know, already not sustainable, and that accelerates it. And so I think the key thing is that, you know, we know that, you know, and then, you know, Republicans will look at that mismatch between spending and revenue and a debt trajectory that goes towards infinity and say, oh, you know, got to cut stuff. There's nothing to be done about it, you know, because we can't raise taxes. And it makes no sense because we know that if we just gave ourselves a tax code that raised as much revenue as it did in the 1990s, we would be on course. We would be on a sustainable fiscal course. And on top of that, would be able to afford vital investments in the American people, like in healthcare, like in childcare, like in paid leave. And so I think that that is the key fact, is that, you know, none of this is unmovable, that the fiscal trajectory and attempts to cut Medicare and Social Security that Monique laid out, they are all the result of these unaffordable large tax cuts that are tilted toward wealthy people. Now, these tax cuts happen, you know, throughout the income distribution, but, you know, I think middle-income Americans got dimes and you know, the wealthiest Americans got dollars and $10 out of these things, that these tax cuts were hugely disproportional to high-income folks. So I think the key thing is that we know that we can get on the right fiscal course, that we can, you know, secure Social Security and Medicare, which, you know, as Monique said, I think are just really important programs. They're kind of proof points for, you know, how the federal government can make a difference in Americans' lives. And, you know, and make other investments in the American people. And so that's why I study taxes and research them, because it's hugely important. I think it's, you know, the thing that makes that unlocks all of the other investments.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Brendan Duke, Senior Director for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress. Monique Morrissey is Senior Economist for the Economic Policy Institute. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025 by discussing what it would mean for the economy. We'll talk more about the plan to raise taxes on the middle class and cut taxes for the wealthy and corporations after a break. This is Your Call. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about what's at stake in the fight for the United States Senate. 34 Senate seats are on the ballot, but only a handful are expected to play a key role in the balance of power. Critical legislation affecting issues like gun control and abortion and key judicial confirmations are on the line. We might even have another U.S. Supreme Court nomination. So there have been a lot of debates across the country. We will play some of the clips, and we'd love to hear from you tomorrow. What Senate races are you watching? 19 days to go to the presidential election. How would you like us to cover the election in these remaining days? We'd love to hear from you. Your call at kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about Project 2025's economic plan, but we're also talking about the Republican plan, it is very connected. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Any questions about the economy, about taxes, about what this would mean for you, your family, in your community, you can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Brendan Duke is Senior Director for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress. Monique Morrissey is Senior Economist for the Economic Policy Institute. Monique, I was just reading your piece again, A Republican Takeover Would Benefit Billionaires, Not You, and then thinking about the discussion we're hearing in the major media about the economy. And this is another important point. You write, as a result of the Trump tax cuts and other tax cuts, billionaires are now paying a lower share of their income in taxes than working class Americans for the first time in modern history. I just wonder how many people know that.
I know, it's frustrating. And I should say that the citation for that is these two economists, Thomas Piketty and Gabriel Zucman. Emmanuel Saez and Gabriel Zucman. And they're famous. I mean, one of the things is it's actually sometimes very hard to find out how much the richest 400 Americans are. This is who they were talking about when they were talking about the wealthiest. They looked at the top 400. And they know more than anybody else does what their income is. But income is, for people like that, is squishy. A lot of people like Jeff Bezos, you know, claim to have very low incomes. And so, you have to sort of unpack that. But in any case, they found that, you know, in the 60s and 70s, people were, you know, these people would have been paying more than half of their income in taxes. And now they're paying about a quarter of it. And that's slightly less than in what they're paying in taxes than the bottom half of income earners. So not even the middle class, but the lower middle class and working class and poor people are paying a higher share of their income. A lot of this has to do with the fact that if you, wages are taxed for Social Security, and again, this is capped at $168,800 for the wealthiest people. They're not paying any of those taxes, and then they find various loopholes and tax shelters to avoid taxing the rest of it. So this is a big problem. And you know, the Republicans not only have lower taxes for those people and for corporations, which indirectly benefits these people, but have also basically tried to prevent the IRS from looking into what taxes these people are paying into. So that, in fact, one of the things that's kind of odd about the Republican Study Committee is for a party that claims to be law and order, they're outraged at the fact that the Biden administration and Democrats in Congress funded people in the IRS to look specifically at the highest earners, people who are using aggressive tax shelters to not pay their fair share of taxes.
Right. I've been wanting to do a show about that. The IRS put out a press release in July. The IRS tops $1 billion in past due taxes collected from millionaires. And you just reminded me of the great reporting ProPublica has been doing about tax cuts for the wealthy. And they found, I want to date this piece so I get this right, this was April of 2022, that Jeff Bezos paid an effective tax rate of 23.2%. He had so little income in a couple of recent years that he was able to pay zero in federal income taxes in those periods. Brendan, what are your thoughts about this? Why isn't this common knowledge that for the first time in modern history, billionaires are now paying a lower share of their income in taxes than working class people?
I think a big part is a lot of people don't get confused by taxes, because they can be confusing and very complicated, right? And I think that's kind of to wealthy people's benefit, right? That if people aren't paying attention, that makes it, you know, far easier to construct a tax system that, you know, leaves vast portions of a lot of these wealthy people's income untaxed. I think a really interesting thing is that, you know, President Biden actually laid out a really strong proposal, in my view, to address a lot of this, which was, you know, very targeted at this, which is a minimum tax for billionaires. Really, people worth over $100 million, so, you know, some people in the $100 million to $999 million range, but they call it billionaires, and that's, I think that's fair. And basically, the idea is that they have to actually pay a 25% minimum tax rate on their income, including, you know, gains in their stock. And the idea here is that someone like Jeff Bezos, you know, can become the wealthiest man in the world, or I guess Elon Musk now, both of them in both cases, without paying much in taxes because the buildup of their fortunes goes untaxed. And so the idea here is that you have a minimum tax rate, you know, not the full capital gains tax rate, but just kind of a minimum one where they kind of prepay their taxes. And so that when they sell the stock one day, they actually don't pay as much in taxes because they've already kind of prepaid it, but they kind of pay as they go. And I think this makes a lot of sense for billionaires because this is the main way they accrue money. Most Americans, you know, this is not as big of a deal as, you know, their wages and, you know, their salaries. But for billionaires, I think it makes a lot of sense. So I think President Biden has laid out a very smart idea to tackle this problem for the very, very high end. This isn't a problem for, you know, people making $1 million a year. This is for, I think I'm going to get the number of zeros right, hopefully, the top 0.001% of families. So there's ways to address this problem.
According to Yahoo Finance, Jeff Bezos, because of his investment in Amazon, he makes about $35 million a day. You can't even wrap your head around that, $35 million a day. And we should say, and we're going to do another show about this, but Vice President Kamala Harris has adopted the billionaire minimum tax proposal as part of her presidential campaign. It would require households that make more than $100 million a year to pay 25% of their income in taxes. Do we have any idea, Brendan, how many Americans make more than $100 million a year?
I'm trying to remember. It might be something like, so it's not how much they make each year.
I'm sorry, their net worth?
Yeah, it's their net worth at $100 million. Okay. I think it's something like $16,000, if I'm remembering right, but I might have that. It's a very small number. Again, it's the top 0.001%. So, you know, a really small group of people.
So Project 2025 then and the Republican plan would just further these policies of tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations. And Brendan, you all found at the Center for American Progress, just to go into details here, to talk about families. So a family of four making $110,000 a year would see about a $3,000 tax increase?
That's right.
And then households making more than $10 million would receive between $1.5 and $2.4 million in tax cuts?
That's right.
What else do we need to know about just those, how this would affect people? Would it affect anyone making less than $110,000 a year?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, the easiest way to think about this is we have seven tax brackets right now, right, that range from 10% to 37%. Project 2025 thinks that's too many, and they want just two brackets, a 15% bracket and a 30% bracket. And the cutoff being, when you mentioned, you know, around $166,000 a year, you stop paying taxes on your wages for Social Security. They you know, want the 15% tax rate to kick in at that point. So I think the easiest way to think about this is for a married couple, if you make under the standard deduction, you know, it doesn't affect you. That's $28,000 a year for a married couple, right? $28,000 a year, you don't pay taxes, income taxes now, and you wouldn't under Project 2025. But then, you know, between that $28,000 to around $170,000, right? They would raise the rates. And right now, you know, basically the rates people pay in that range are a 10% bracket and a 12% bracket. Project 2025 is talking about a 15% bracket. So just unambiguously, that raises taxes on that group of people making between about $28,000 and something, you know, like $130,000. And I did the math or something like that. So, you know, that's the group that gets affected and pays more in taxes. And, you know, if this was part of a project to, you know, reduce the deficit or something, you know, I mean, it would be annoying to pay more in taxes, I think, for a lot of people, but you would kind of understand it. But at the same time, then, they cut taxes for high-income people because, you know, for one thing, that 30% tax bracket is lower than the current 37% tax bracket. So that is a tax cut for, you know, extraordinarily wealthy people, like the $10 million family example I gave. And then on top of that, you know, the key ways that really high-income people make money are, you know, capital gains and dividend income, which is investment income. And Project 2025, you know, right now, they pay about a 24% rate on that income, so lower than their normal, than the income they would get from wages, but, you know, 24%. Project 2025 wants to lower that to 15%, and that is a huge tax cut for them. That is the main driver of the tax cuts as they're getting. So the basic math behind all of this, it's pretty brutal, is the vast majority of Americans would pay more in taxes from these higher tax brackets, where the tax bracket structure would be lower for high-income families. And, you know, as I wrote in the piece, this is the short-term plan. They actually plan to move to a long-term plan, which would exacerbate this income distribution from low- and middle-income families to the wealthiest.
So again, capital gains and qualified dividends would be taxed at 15%, which you write is exclusively a tax cut for less than 2% of households making more than $500,000 a year. And we have an email from Kevin who writes, I agree tax rates on capital gains should be the same as wages of working people. Another way to correct inequity of the tax system is to eliminate the cap on income subject to Social Security taxes. And this has been proposed by Senator Bernie Sanders. Thank you for that, Kevin. And then to talk about the corporate tax cut, can you remind us, Monique, just how monumental it really was in 2017 when Donald Trump and congressional Republicans cut the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21%.
Well, I mean, I think that speaks for itself. And there were other, there were also other additional corporate tax cuts, some of which I think the thing that also is worth noting here is that bad as the individual tax cuts were, which were heavily loaded towards high earners, those at least expired after, you know, they automatically sunsetted and they have to be extended. And so a lot of what the Republicans want to do is to continue those tax cuts, whereas the corporate tax cuts, even though it looks bad on paper, they made them permanent. So that's that also sort of shows where your priorities are. And again, it's really important to understand that corporate tax cuts are really tax cuts for the wealthy, because disproportionately wealthy people are the ones who own the, you know, own stock or own or companies directly. So this was, you know, a huge, huge boon, not just to corporations, but to the wealthy people that own them. And again, priorities. These were permanent, not even, you know, not even a pretense that they were going to be extended, I mean, or sunsetted.
Brendan, what has been the result of the corporate tax rate going from 35 to 21%?
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, that's it's a massive cut, right? It's a very big cut. If it was 35 to 34% or something like that, you know, I think that we wouldn't necessarily expect this. We wouldn't hold it against it if it didn't have economy-wide effect. But 35% to 21% is a very large cut. You should be able to see that in the economy if cutting the corporate tax rate has a big economic effect. And it just turns out it didn't really. So when you look at, you know, he cut taxes at the end of 2017. When you look at the 2 years before that and then the 2 years after that, you got to ignore COVID, so just, you know, ending right before COVID, GDP growth was the same. investment, which is the key method by which these tax cuts were supposed to spur all this economic growth, investment actually went down the 2 years following the Trump tax cuts compared to the 2 years before. So we know it couldn't have been that effective just based on those aggregates. And then when people kind of, you know, investigate in there a little and use all sorts of, you know, fancy economic tools to see if there's an effect, they see, you know, a tiny small one, but nothing worth the trillions of dollars we're talking about in foregone revenue, which, again, you know, darkens the fiscal outlook and could be invested in, directly in the American people in things like childcare, like paid leave, like Medicare, like, you know, a home health care program, those sorts of things. And so, you know, the effects, again, were just minimal and really hard to see. And so I think that, you know, I mean, in some sense that's comforting, and that suggests that we can recoup a lot of that revenue and use it to invest in people.
So Project 2025 calls for bringing that corporate tax rate down to 18%. But according to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, Donald Trump actually wants to bring the corporate tax rate down further to 15%, Brendan.
Yeah, it's the zone where Donald Trump's actually more extreme than Project 2025, right? You know, I think that, again, I think the key thing is that he does not believe in income and corporate taxes. He floated getting rid of all income and corporate taxes and replacing those with a tariff, which actually Project 2025 proposed something similar, replacing them with a sales tax, which is the most regressive tax reform you could possibly imagine, because it's just basically asking Americans who go shopping at Safeway, at CVS, on Amazon, to pay more in taxes without taxing the people who own those companies. So again, it's just massive redistribution, class warfare in many ways, on behalf of billionaires and corporations.
Brendan Duke is Senior Director for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress. Monique Morrissey is Senior Economist for the Economic Policy Institute. We're talking about Project 2025, the economy, and taxes. It would raise taxes on the middle class and cut taxes for the wealthy and corporations. Monique, what else would you like to add before we really talk, go back to the bigger picture about Project 2025 and then what you have uncovered about the House Republican Study Committee, which represents 80% of House Republicans, and what they're calling for on taxes?
Well, first of all, I wanted to follow up on something that Brendan raised, which is the whole switching from an income tax to tariffs. And I think that, you know, the one thing where economists disagree a little bit about is the usefulness of different trade policies, of active trade policies. But I think it's really instructive to contrast, you know, so the Biden administration has also, you know, kept some tariffs and imposed some tariffs on certain goods, but they've been targeted. Whereas what Trump is talking about is replacing income tax with a tariff. And I would say that one, you know, the first issue of like whether or not targeted tariffs to protect certain key industries or prevent dumping or various things like that, you know, many economists, myself included, would agree with some of those. And, you know, I don't think that, you know, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about relying on tariffs for income. And one thing we know that happened when Trump actually imposed high tariffs during his administration was that it didn't actually protect the industry, you know, U.S. workers. Like people might think, well, who cares? We need to protect workers. What it did was prompt retaliatory tariffs from other countries and hurt exporters to the point where then Trump realized that in particular, he was hurting farm exports and had to throw a lot of money at farmers to make up for that. So one thing I think is really important for people listening to this to remember is that it's not like, aside from the fact that it's average working families that are going to be paying for these tariffs, it doesn't actually protect jobs because inevitably there's going to be retaliation. So it just sort of, you know, I'm not saying that tariffs that are targeted to protect key industries are not valid in some cases, but these kinds of high across the board tariffs, and even in its, you know, very conservative people are opposed to them and will recognize that they're very regressive and that they'll fall heavily on regular people. And also another point that Brendan raised that I think is really important is the these are not good for economic growth. So the all of these plans, I mean, all kinds of mainstream and centrist and even center right organizations have, you know, Wall Street firms have said this is actually the Trump tax and tariff policies are going to slow growth. I mean, they're not only going to, you know, bust a huge hole in the budget and make, you know, cause working people to pay way more in taxes, and also indirectly lead to major benefit cuts. But they're actually not even going to do what they claim to do, which is boost investment and boost growth. So that is something that almost all economists, you know, anywhere from the center right to the, you know, left will agree that this is not something, it's not going to cause people to invest. It's not going to cause economic growth. It's not going to trickle down. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But the main thing is that, you know, rich people, they tend not to spend. I mean, you know, in terms of a pure stimulus, rich people tend to save more of their money. So the worst stimulus for the economy is giving rich people a tax break. Also, what drives investment is really like prospects for future growth. There's usually plenty of investment money swirling around. We're not really supply constrained. We're demand constrained, usually economy. And so what you want to do is boost demand, grow the economy faster. And what Trump is talking about and what the Republicans are talking about would do the opposite. And the other thing is that this is a little bit of a controversial issue, but, you know, one of the worst things that they're talking about, and it would be bad for both the economy and for, you know, specifically for Social Security, is, you know, deporting 11 million, immigrant workers. I mean, you know, now even there's sort of an agreement between the Democrats and the Republicans now that there needs to be border control, but we're talking about people who are already working in the country. And in fact, my organization recently put out a report on the economic effects of immigrant workers, and they are actually, contrary to popular belief, hugely positive. I mean, they can stress local budgets for education. They can do, you know, here and there they cause problems, but overwhelmingly, immigrants have very high labor force participation, and they consume less in government services than they pay in taxes. So they're good for other taxpayers, and they're good for creating other jobs for other people. They grow the economy much more than they consume. And so this is also another thing that would actually tend to, if actually implemented, if they were successful in creating the kind of police state that would be required to deport 11 million people, that mm-hmm. would cause the economy to collapse and not just have an effect on those workers, but also on other working families, negative effect.
Well, and then just to talk about how hard people work day after day after day with, in many cases, you know, they have really difficult jobs, especially when we're talking about whether it's farm workers, you know, a lot of people using their body to work. I just think about that, Monique, sometimes walking around, going into stores, a restaurant, just to see who's working, who has the tough job. And it's almost always the immigrant. And yet they're talked about in numbers. And so I was thinking about that yesterday. So I just wanted to add that in.
Monique, yeah, and the numbers bear you out in terms of injuries. I mean, it's terrible to say, but the injury rates, you know, for example, I mean, they're not all immigrants, but Hispanics are overrepresented in construction and have very, very high injury rates. And what do Republicans want to do about this? They want to cut the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is already severely underfunded. So we need to raise labor standards for all workers and not blame the victims.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Monique, final thoughts, about a minute left. When you look at what Project 2025 wants to do, the Republican plans, what they've already done with tax cuts, how does that affect income inequality in this country at a time when we've got 140 million poor and low income people in the country, according to the Poor People's Campaign?
It would be dramatically bad. And just to give you an example, as a contrary example, the Biden-Harris administration, they did one, you know, just this one simple thing that they, and with the help of Democrats and some Republicans, is to expand the child tax credit. And that by itself cut childhood poverty rate by half. And this is something that Republicans don't want to expand. So we're talking about not only making the rich much, much richer, but also making the poor much, much poorer, raising their taxes, or poor or just working class, you're raising their taxes and you're dramatically cutting their benefits. Again, you're cutting 20% off the top across the board for all social insurance programs. according to the Republican Study Committee report. And you're also cutting other government programs, the discretionary domestic programs, by 40%. Now, whether or not all these things can pass, probably not. But why are they pushing these unpopular extreme positions unless they are hoping to get at least as much of it done as possible? They're certainly not doing it to get voters because these are deeply unpopular. They're doing it because they're it's ideological and it's at the behest of their big money donors.
Brendan, what would you add? A minute left.
Just that I thought the way you framed it at the beginning, that all these, you know, pundits want Donald Trump to talk about the economy, but what they're really talking about is looking in the rear view mirror and not looking forward. And I think, as Monique and I have described, these policies are just crazy when you think about their effects on, you know, on the vast majority of Americans. And so I think it's really important that people think about these things, you know, over the next few weeks, that, you know, policy makes a real difference in people's lives. And like the child tax credit, as Monique mentioned, that can, you know, be good. And as we've spent most of this hour discussing, it can also be pretty bad.
Brendan Duke is Senior Director for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress. Monique Morrissey is Senior Economist for the Economic Policy Institute. You can find the pieces that they have written about Project 2025 and the Republican plan for the economy at KALW.org. Click news and then your call. Brendan and Monique, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for doing this and for having
me. Thank you. And we hope you can join us tomorrow. We'll talk about what's at stake in the fight for the U.S. Senate. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And Tariq Ansari, thank you so much. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.